Okay, welcome to Movie Dudes episode 151. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
And this week, me and Chris actually saw a couple of the same movies for once, so give us a little, pat on back. But first off, I wanted to start with a movie that Chris saw that I haven't seen yet. I'll probably see it in the very near future and give you my thoughts on it. But that is Happy Death Day, Chris. Tell us.
All right. So have you ever seen Groundhog Day?
I actually have not, but I'm very familiar with what it is.
With the concept, right? Like Bill Murray relives Groundhog Day over.
And everyone who's listening to this has probably seen it too.
Yeah. It's a similar concept in Happy Death Day. The main character, Tree, I believe it's short for Teresa, she keeps getting murdered over and over again. But it doesn't end there. She reboots to the beginning of the day. As the film moves along, like it just keeps like she keeps dying in various ways over the course of this film. It's never explained why. So there's no like weird mysticism or anything. It's just something that's fucking happening to her when she gets killed. And she kind of comes up with this idea of like, hey, I'm going to find out who is killing me and stop it. Seems like a solid plan.
It's a fun premise, I think.
Yeah. It's not wholly original. Like it does play off of Groundhog Day. They call out Groundhog Day in the film. actually the main character, she has never seen Groundhog Day. but the main guy character, her kind of like, I guess semi love interest, he has seen it, and he kind of mentions that like her experience is very Groundhog Day-ish. But when the movie starts, Tree is a complete asshole. Like you hate her. And you don't mind that she dies. Like she is a complete bitch. And there's this nice redemptive arc as she kind of realizes that she is like a bad person and that she associates with bad people and she does things to those less fortunate, and she starts to try and make amends. In doing so, because she has this time as she keeps dying every day, it's played for laughs in parts. There's when she finally realizes like, I don't know, three or four in, I guess, that she's died. She just kind of says, fuck it. And she starts walking through the quad naked and, kind of like, fucking around with people and, knowing that, there's no consequence for it because she's going to die later that day and it's all going to reset again. In fact, probably the biggest part is where she kind of feels that she's bested her rival, but, Carter, who is the guy whose room she keeps waking up in, he does something that saves her, but ends up dead himself, and so she sacrifices herself to reset the day so that he doesn't have to die unfairly. It's a fun film. There's some fun kills. The villain, there's kind of like a slasher type villain. It's hard to describe. It's this like bucktooth cartoon character type thing, and
It's like a mask or something.
Yeah, it's like a really goofy looking mask. So it's this absurd level of like, this person is hunting her in this nonsensical mask, yet killing her over and over again, mixed with the death. So it's fun. It's a good time. There's a pretty good twist. You could probably call it out pretty early on.
Oh yeah, I think I know what it is. Damn it. Because I have heard spoilers on this movie. I totally forgot them, and now I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so there is a twist. I didn't catch it at first, but like I, you know, there's enough clues pointing to it over the
Yeah.
course of the over the course of the film that leads up to it, and it ends on a pretty funny note as well. I liked it. It's a good time. It's 90 minutes, maybe like 90, 95 minutes long, so it gets in and gets out real quick. Has a great redemptive arc for Tree. Like, you know, she starts off a bitch, you like her by the end, you're happy she's made it to Tuesday. Like it works. It's you know, it balances it balances comedy and horror pretty well. There's a pretty good mystery going on. The villain is decent enough, so it works. I'm gonna give it a four.
Nice.
Yeah, I really liked it.
I'm excited to see it. I do have a couple, I guess, a couple questions before we move on, real quick, though. Does it feel, at least like this impression I got, does it feel like a 90s, like post-Scream, like horror movie, or what? Or am I just, do I have the wrong impression based on
No,
trailers?
I mean, like, there's, I think Scream is probably a good comparison here. They definitely draw a lot from that.
Yeah.
You know, in addition to Groundhog's Day, like, it is a film that knows the slasher genre, and it is, it's playing, you know, subversively with it, so.
And I the other question I heard, I was listening to F This Movie today, and this was on one of their top 10 horror movie lists, and I think the guy said that like it doesn't actually show any of the murders of her, like it like cuts away right before it happens every time. Is that true?
Yeah, probably. I don't know, like,
It didn't occur to you as you were
no, it's
like
like,
watching it
I
that it
mean,
was doing that, because
be
it is
because
PG-13.
yeah, and when she dies, it reboots. So, like,
They're not going to show, like, she would not, I guess, yeah, like, they're not going to show, like, the gore of it because she's already dead and
right,
it
she's
goes,
dead. Like, yeah, it's not
And
so.
since it's from her perspective.
Yeah, but there's enough of it that like you kind of see what the kill was, and they're always different and inventive, so.
This was, like, not on my radar, but between you and then them putting it on their top 10, I was like, maybe I should watch this.
It is a ton smarter than, like, I mean, just like the name is pretty stupid. Like the concept is interesting, but honestly, like, you could go really bad here. And they do a pretty good job of keeping it up. Like, it's way smarter than it deserves to be, or like looks on the surface, so.
Cool. I will share my thoughts when I see it, which is hopefully soon, even though it is very long wait right now. But I will see it soon.
Cool.
And also, this week marks week one of our Lethal Weapon series rewatch, which I totally forgot that I had done. But like you brought it up, Lethal Weapon, before we started recording. I was like, oh yeah, we were doing that. So, hold on here. So yeah, I watched Lethal Weapon this last week, as you did as well, right?
Yeah.
1987 American buddy cop action film directed by Richard Donner and written by Shane Black. It's been a long, long time since I've seen Lethal Weapon. In my mind, though, it was kind of like the prototypical, buddy cop film. Definitely one of like my favorite like kind of action movies as a kid. Not up there with like Terminator or Die Hard, but like I'd say one tier below that for me, right?
Sure.
So I was excited to go back and revisit this and see how it holds up. And I guess I'll turn it over to you here. How do you think it holds up?
Pretty well, actually, and mostly because of Mel Gibson and Danny Glover.
Mm-hmm.
They have a great chemistry in this film that really works. Like, Murtaugh is the straight man, and Riggs, Mel Gibson's character, is the kind of nutball, off the wall guy, and the two of them together, it's like these opposites working to, you know, get the job done. And they have very different ways of being police officers, but together it works really well. They play off each other very strongly. It's, I think you had mentioned this, that the plot
we're gonna get into it
is fucking nonsensical, but
I mean, do you get what I'm saying when I say that? Because I will get into specifics, but like,
oh yeah,
you see where I'm coming from? Like,
oh, it's batshit insane stupidity that makes zero sense. But this is the like prototype for just about every buddy cop movie that has come since. I think it still works really, really well. I still enjoyed it for as stupid as things are in it, including the ending where Riggs is fighting Joshua, Gary Busey's
character. Just let him fight.
It's just so fucking dumb. It's like they're fighting on Murtaugh's lawn with cops just like pulling up, like, surrounding him. It's so stupid. But
there's like, I mean, yeah, not to jump straight to the end, but fuck it, whatever. Yeah, it's like a mastermind criminal that they have, like, you know, there's a billion cops there ready to arrest them. And they're like, no, we're going to let them fight.
Right. It's so dumb. It is so, so stupid.
It's fun.
I mean, it works. It works. It's so stupid, but it works. It works really well.
Yeah. As I'm watching this, I'm live tweeting like I'll usually do when I'm watching a movie. And, you know, I'm sitting there, you know, revisiting this movie I'm very fond of. And so as I'm, you know, the first hour or so, I'm just like praising it like crazy. I'm like, and I do believe this. I was talking about how the movie is incredibly efficient in establishing who the characters are and making you care about them. Like, within an hour, you really know who Riggs and Murtaugh are, and, like, you're rooting for them, right?
Yeah.
And it does this in scenes that are, like, classic scenes now. It's like, there's something going on. Like, it's pushing the movie forward, but what we're really doing also is, like, setting up who these characters are. So, you know, Mel Gibson's character Riggs in this first film, especially, I mean, he's like a loose cannon. You know, he's suicidal. He's mourning the death of his wife. He's crazy. And then you have Glover as like the straight man. You know, and they establish this in like scenes where he fucking, there's a guy about to jump off a building and he goes up there and handcuffs himself to the guy and jumps off the building with him. And like, that is a scene that anyone who's seen this movie remembers. It's a classic scene, but like beyond that being just like a fun classic scene, it's setting up, it's letting you know who Mel Gibson's character is in it. So like, I'm still blown away by that part of it. Like, you know, an hour into this movie, I'm fucking loving it. I'm loving the characters. I'm ready for the ride that it's going to take me on. But then the plot starts to actually like kick in, and it like, it does not hold up. I'm like, what is, like, if you sit and think about any portion of the plot, it's like, okay, so Tom Atkins is with these guys who are like in Vietnam or some shit, and they fucking are now selling drugs. They're like a drug cartel, essentially, right?
Basically, yeah.
He decides he wants out, so they decide that they're going to kill his daughter in the most contrived
way
I could possibly imagine. Like, first off, they like poison her, but then she also commits suicide because she's like high on drugs or whatever the fuck. And like, I don't understand why there needed to be that many layers to that. Like, for them to even like, oh, it's a suicide. Oh, but she was on drugs. Oh, but it wasn't really a suicide because she was actually poisoned and she would have died anyway. It's like, I'm like, why did it need that many layers before we even get into the fact that it's a murder? You know, it's like crazy.
Right.
Yeah, like, but, why? Only
yeah.
because it creates another scene later that is maybe highly unnecessary. Like, that's it. Like, it makes zero sense as to why, you know, there's this suicide, not suicide, murder plot. Like, if you wanted to establish that she was murdered, just push her off the fucking balcony. Like,
yeah, it's like, it's, I mean, Shane Black is doing this noir thing that he does. I mean, he did the same thing in The Nice Guys, where it's like a small crime or small murder is uncovering this larger plot, that, you know, like this larger conspiracy, right? But it just makes no sense here. Like, I don't understand how we're just supposed to be willing to accept the leaps of logic that it makes. I mean, I guess we did at the time. I mean, I was like an 8-year-old kid at the time, so I was willing to accept whatever you fucking tell me. But I'm just wondering, like, how they expected audiences to believe this. So, like, then they confront Tom Atkins about this, and as they're confronting him, he tells them everything. Why? I don't know why, but he fucking tells them everything. And a fucking helicopter shows up as he's doing it and blows him away. I'm like, okay, this, like, somehow knew that he's talking to them at that point, or they were just going to kill him anyways. I don't know. But then they know, so this criminal enterprise knows that Riggs and Murtaugh, like, know about, like, they know what's up. And instead of laying low or doing anything sort of smart, they commit way more crimes in the service of, like, getting rid of these cops who know what's going on. It's like,
yeah,
it's like if like in Breaking Bad, once Hank got a whiff that something was going on, fucking Walter White just fucking nuked the whole police department.
Right.
It's like, it makes no fucking sense. You want to be clever and covering up your tracks even more and covering up anything that they could prove in court. Not just, okay, we're going to start fucking blowing everyone away. I mean, I get this is an action movie, but like, get us to that action in a way that makes any sort of sense.
Like, it goes completely off the rails. Like,
yeah.
One, these two are cops. Are we actually supposed to believe that Riggs and Murtaugh would hold that information that they got from?
Yeah, like, if they kill these two guys, it goes away.
Like, it's all over.
It makes it worse. It, like, makes it way worse.
Because now you've killed two cops, and like, and now, like, the entire police force understands. They're probably going to ring in the FBI.
It's like, even if they didn't tell people, there's like case files and shit, right? Like, you. You go, okay, yeah. They were investigating, like, this when they got blown away.
Like, I get it. It's an action movie, and we don't do paperwork in action movies. But, like, there has to be some, like, logic that, hey, these two cops are still going to file the reports because they have to. Like,
yeah, like, it doesn't make sense that their reaction to these cops finding out is that. Like, to go way over the top and try to kill them over and over. The real reaction would be to, like, you know, lawyer up, talk to your lawyer, figure out ways to, like, to obfuscate what's going on and make it unprovable in court. That's what you're trying to do. Not, but whatever. I mean,
well, and I'm not even sure that Hunsaker, Tom Atkins' character, I'm not even sure that does he give names? I don't believe he actually gives names.
He doesn't. Literally, all he tells them is, like, yeah, we were this group and now we're back here and, like, we decided to, like, be selling the drugs that we discovered in Vietnam. It's like, okay, like, great.
The total, like, just, like, boilerplate statement. Like, hey, here's what we were doing. But I'm not actually going to tell you who any of these people are.
Yeah, they know nothing. This is the most, like, ridiculous, insane thing. So, like, when it's near the end, like, they're, like, holding them captive and shit. And instead of killing them, they're like, they're wanting to get information out of them.
Right.
Now. And they're like, so what do you know? And they're like, we know that you guys sell heroin or whatever.
Right.
And like, but what else? And they're like, that's it. But like, tell me. And they keep fucking, like, beating them up more and more. And they're like, this is literally all we know. But now we know that you tried to kill us. that you fucking tried to do a drive-by on us.
And this, right, and we know who the fuck you are.
But all I knew before was that you guys were a shadowy organization that sells drugs. Like, that's literally all they know.
It was going to take us years, years more to figure this out, but you're the worst criminals ever.
There's, like, nothing more to extract. So, like, yeah, like, I accept it. I mean, the movie's a fun ride as it is, even once it gets into the bonkers crazy stuff, because you do get some, like, kind of fun action. But, man, it kind of, like, it almost made me wish I didn't revisit this, so that now I know how, like, now what I'm going to remember going forward for the rest of my life is how bonkers the fucking plot of Lethal Weapon is. And it kind of, like, soured me a little bit on going forward, where I'm like, oh, I guess we're still doing this. Although I am excited to watch 2 again, because I remember really liking that one as well.
Yeah,
but, like, go ahead, Chris.
2 is the one that I remember being my favorite, so...
So hopefully we don't ruin
that. Wow, yeah, this could go really bad.
But I think, you know, getting away from how goofy the criminal plot is, the things I said about the first hour, I think are... You can't take it away from it, you know what I mean? These are characters that you do love by the end of this movie, and it makes sense why there's a bunch of sequels, or at least a couple sequels, and why people remember Lethal Weapon, and why it kind of, like, set this kind of standard going forward. I mean, there is a lot to like about it, and there's a lot of things, like, Lethal Weapon 1 has always been my favorite because of that stuff in the first hour. I think mainly because of how fucking edgy Riggs's character is, like how fucking crazy and, like, truly psychotic he might actually be. I think by the end he kind of, like, lets on, like, some of it's an act.
But early on, he does it for the job.
Yeah, but early on when we're watching him crying and put the gun in his mouth and nearly pull the trigger, there's no one he's performing for there. So, you know, there is a real edge to his character that I think gets softened up as the series goes on. But I just love that dynamic in the first one of this guy is a fucking nutcase. You don't know what he might do next. And this crazy guy that's just trying to get through the, or this normal guy who's just trying to get through the day. And them getting paired up together. You know, and now it's a classic, you know, pairing, like buddy cop pairing. But,
I mean, it's so, I mean, I think it's Fox. There is a Lethal Weapon TV show now.
Yeah, I know, which I think you said you liked, and I've heard is good.
Like, what I saw of it seemed okay. Like, The guy who plays Riggs is decent. Damon Wayans is playing Murtaugh. Like, you know, they kind of revisit some of those themes and give a little more look onto Riggs' like personal life. But yeah, it's like, I mean, it's so iconic. It's so... I mean, this spawned Bad Boys. This spawned, like, every, like, buddy cop movie imaginable since 87, so.
Yeah. I guess a couple other things I want to touch on, too, before we move on. Besides just Gibson and Danny Glover, this is an awesome cast. You know, you have the bad guys. You have Gary Busey. You have, like, smaller people that, like, I recognize from, like, there's an actor named Edo Ross who plays this guy Mendez, who, like, he's the guy that comes into the club early on and they like burn the arm in front of him. And he's like, whoa, these guys are fucking crazy. He plays like this boyfriend on 6 feet under, like a decade later and 100 pounds heavier later. Like, he's nearly unrecognizable, but like I saw his eyes in his face and I like paused it. I'm like, tell my girlfriend, I go, who is that? And she's like, I don't know. I'm like, as soon as I told her, she's like, get out of here. There's like lots of little things like that, like little smaller actors too. You know, Tom Atkins. You have also the Man in Black from Halloween series in this as the ultimate baddie. I forgot the actor's name. The guy that's above Busey and Atkins.
Oh, the general?
Yeah. He's the Man in Black from Halloween part 5 and 6.
Really?
Like, he's the guy that's like in charge of Michael Myers in that bullshit story.
Okay.
Just a lot of, like, you know, a lot of familiar faces like that you get out of this. And I guess the one other thing I wanted to mention, and I'll let you, you know, mention anything else you want to. Die Hard gets a lot of, like, love as being a Christmas movie. This is a totally acceptable Christmas movie They say Merry Christmas like a billion times in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, it happens over Christmas, I believe. I mean, they're in fact, there's a note that is left on the tree.
Yeah, I mean it's more so than Die Hard almost. And there's the whole Riggs doesn't really have anywhere to go for Christmas thing going on. I kind of dig all that shit. So I guess before we move on, is there anything else that we didn't cover that you wanted to touch on before we moved on or?
No, I mean it definitely is like when you look at it, Die Hard is a guy trying to survive, like, in that tower. At least the first Die Hard is. Lethal Weapon is like this bonkers ass, like once it gets moving, once it moves into the crazy shit, like they're blowing up crap in the city, like it is just like wanton mayhem, and it's great because of that. And like I think that's why like films like Bad Boys work, because of like the kind of template that Lethal Weapon set here to go forward. So
What's the Jackie Chan movie with
Rush
Crystal?
Hour.
Yeah, that's like the same vein too. Yeah, I haven't seen all. Actually, I've not seen either of those movies, but I can tell just by looking at the trailers. I'm like, yeah, they're doing Lethal Weapon.
It's just like, it's straight cop, goofy cop, and then just like crazy mayhem and car chases and stuff. So
And you can still see some of the DNA, like I said, in the Nice Guys. I'm very interested to see Shane Black's next film, which is Predators or whatever it is, the new Predator film. So that should be real. I don't know how you do a crime noir buddy cop thing out of Predator, but we'll see what he does. Although I'm sure it's not what it is. But yeah, I guess my rating on it is, look, this movie's a classic. But as for how it stands up now, I give it a 4.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. It's kind of goofy, but you come for the personalities, and they pull through.
Now moving on to a little bit more recent stuff. We've been doing some catching up on 2017 horror. And one of the movies that we both got to see was from early last year, The Devil's Candy. It's got a lot of hype in the horror community. Why don't you tell us about it, Chris, before we get into it?
This is an 80-minute film.
Yes,
So
it
it's right up my alley. Gets in, gets
is.
out, gets the shit done. It is a movie about a painter, and his family, and this crazy kind of guitar player dude. And the guitar player guy, I guess, like used to live in the house or something that they bought, and he's nuts, and he is evidently like hearing things or getting instructions from Satan. On all the while, the dad, who's the painter, is getting visions of children in like these dire situations, and his daughter ends up being one of them, and I guess it all ties together with the crazy guy.
Well, yeah, it seems like whatever's working on the crazy guy is starting to work on
On
them
him
once
as
they move
well,
into their house. Yeah.
and I don't know. There's like some bullshit storylines about like the guy trying to get his paintings like in a gallery, and which is weird because it's an 80-minute film, like that there's some like weird filler. And then for me, it took about 50 minutes, 35, 45 to 50 minutes for this movie to really kick in for me. But once his daughter gets kidnapped, I thought it was a great tense ride from there on out. It is low budget as all hell. There's some terrible special effects towards the end. But I thought,
you noticed that as well, huh?
Yeah,
I thought that was gonna be my weird nitpick.
It's
I don't usually notice that shit either.
Shit. Like, it's something like a movie like this, like you know, low budget horror doesn't have to be bad. And I'm not saying The Devil's Candy's bad, but like something like that is super call outable because it just stands out against everything else in the film. Like everything else is raw and gritty and kind of filmed as you would expect. And then there's this like weird visual effects fuck up. Like,
I mean, let's make sure we're talking about the same thing. Cause I'm talking about the fire. I think the
yeah,
fire,
yeah,
looks
the
like,
fire.
It looks like a fucking 90s video game. Like,
yeah, it does not look like a,
looks like fucking Doom. Like Jesus Christ.
And I get why you can't put, you know, the characters in a giant ring of fire in a house. But there's ways to film that scene without it looking like a fucking, you know, late 90s video game.
Or what? I mean, yeah, it looks like a late 90s CGI fire. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Like, oh, we just found out how to make fire. Let's put it in everything.
Yeah. Yeah, but anyways, was that all you had to say about the setup here?
I mean, like that's kind of the setup, right? Is like it's very short. It's in and out. It's
it's very short.
It's just like that final 35 minutes once she gets kidnapped, and then there's kind of this mental block within. I'm trying to think of the guy's Ray Smiley. He's the bad guy here.
Yeah.
Once he kind of gets it in his head that he needs to kill Zoe and hunt her down. Like I think the film takes a great turn. It stays tense all the way up, you know, even through the ridiculousness of the fire. I think it gets pretty tense and harrowing, actually.
Yeah, I was really impressed with a lot of the last half hour. I thought some of the, like, the, try not to spoil things, but, like, some of the stuff is incredibly well done. Like, there's a part where she's crawling out of a window and he's grabbing her. And the way that like they hold the beat a little bit, like they hold him, like they actually struggle pulling back and forth. And I just was like, they're like, this is some craftsmanship going on here, right?
Yeah.
Another thing I liked is there is a shooting near the end that happens so matter of factly, like the way the violence happens, and you know you think someone is like dead, and you're like, damn, dude, like it. Like there were things that were impressing me for sure, and like in that like kind of thrill ride of an ending, right?
Yes.
But I just, to me, like, all right, one. Usually, a short film is a good thing for me. Here, it felt so slight. Like it felt like I was just getting into everything, and it was over. Like I was not bored in the build up. Like I know you said it starts off kind of a little slow. I was like into the story it was telling.
Well, yeah, it's let me maybe backtrack a little bit on that. It's not that I found it slow. I think it is ultimately like when you look at the film as a whole, because there is no payoff for it. There's no like they go into all this weird mysticism shit, and then
yeah, that's one of my problems. I'm like, yeah, well, what about the Satan shit? Like, yeah, the occult shit? Like, there is a supernatural force in this movie, right? At least we're led to believe.
Yes. Yeah.
But then it amounts to nothing. That's the thing, is like the whole movie. Like, I felt like I was really into the story that was going on. I really liked the theme of a father worried that he's not being a good enough parent. Like, I think that's a cool thing to play off of, like a cool story to tell, right? And I'm into it. I'm into what's going on. And then it's like, oh, now we're getting going. And then it's over. I'm like, okay. like we're getting going, and now here's the climax.
It's yeah, like, it okay, just, like, just it, ends.
It's like once it's started, then it like ramps up all the way. There's no more breathers. Again, like I said, normally like a lot of movies I like are around this length. Now, this is like literally like 79 minutes. You know, like it's fucking short.
Like, it almost feels to me like this would have been better served as a short film that kind of starts with her being kidnapped.
I think there's enough material here. For me, there's enough material, like, thematically for a two-hour movie.
Yes.
It felt short to me. It is short, and it really felt short, and it felt like a big nothing because of that to me. Like,
yeah,
I'm not saying it's bad.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, either you blow that shit out, right? Like, you really expand on the Satan,
or you do the exercise in like mayhem that right. I think we both are in agreement was pretty fucking good.
Yeah,
there's enough other things to like push me away from totally loving it. The fake ass looking fire. I don't like the casting of the bad guy. I mean, sorry to that actor, but like, he comes off. I don't know. For a reason, I just don't dig that guy in that role.
He doesn't come off.
He feels like a. Yeah, he feels like a dude from a fucking comedy or something. Like, and he is not playing comedic or anything. I just feel like that actor feels it more at place in not this movie.
Well, because maybe it's just his performance of it, but he doesn't come off as like sinister and listening to the voices. He comes off as like this autistic guy.
Yeah.
And it's
I don't know.
It's not like, and I don't mean that in like to negatively go against autistic people, but like he seems like he's hearing these voices and stuff, but the way it comes out is like
the way he acts it is he's mentally impaired in some way. Like, yeah, he's got like a mental illness. Like,
he's not all there, and it's not not scary. It's the actions that take place around him that are.
Yeah. So it's weird, and it's like, and if it is this demonic force working on him or whatever, he shouldn't be playing it that way. He should be playing it different than however he's playing it. Like, he plays it like a confused child. Like, right. It doesn't make sense.
Which I think can work, but they go so far in the, you know, the first 40, 50 minutes with the Satanism, the demonic stuff, that like it doesn't play well when it hits up.
Yeah, and that's my other thing is the demonic shit doesn't really pay off.
Yeah.
But I thought Ethan Embry as the dad here was good. I thought like his daughter was good too. The whole rest of the cast, other than the bad guy, I liked. And like I said, I liked the themes that were going on in it. I liked the story it was trying to tell. Me personally, and I rarely say this, I would have liked to see it blown out to a longer movie. Chris is going, just give me the fucking half-hour action movie half-hour, you know, like, craziness. Either way,
because I don't know if they thought out enough of the, you know, the satanic forces to just like, hey, you know what? Like, and this is kind of the vibe I got from the movie. It was like, hey, you know what? Let's make this movie with this like metal soundtrack. Right. Like, and like, let's let metal be one of our themes. Cause like they spend a lot of time, like,
I kind of dig that too. And I'm not a metalhead. I'm not a metal person, but I like when they make characters in movies that are into metal. Like,
yeah, it's like, which I thought was fine, but like that kind of just gets tossed to the side as well.
That's another thing. That's like, whatever.
And it's like, all right. So like, you know,
so they give you that cool shot right before the credits of like a guitar.
Yeah.
Like a bloody guitar or whatever. I was like, all right, cool. And here's a metal song.
I guess that paid off. Like, but it's like, it's almost like they had these ideas that were like, all right, we're going to make this like cool metal thing. And you know what's metal? Satan. Satan's metal. And like, we're going to throw that in, and we're going to throw this in, and then we're going to make this really cool thing. And what they got was really cool, like final 30 minutes and a bunch of like mumbled bullshit kind of in between that they didn't really play.
See, like, I do. I mean, I don't know if you, you agree or not, but I do like the core of, you know, a dad who's like worried about how he's raising his daughter. Like, I think that is like the heart here. Outside of like, yeah, they're doing the metal shit or whatever. I think there's a nice core to the movie, and like you said, there's like a really. It's like the last half hour makes you just think like, I want to see what this director does next. So I generally like it. I just don't think I personally liked it as much. Like, I have enough issues holding me back from praising it as much as most. Like, a lot of the horror community really, really dug this movie last year, and it was near the top of a lot of lists. For me, it's pretty good. Like, I can see what like people dig about it. I have enough problems with it. So I don't know about you. For me, I'm giving it a 3.
Yeah,
I enjoy it.
That's where I'm at. It's a 3 for me.
I will be watching more horror movies, and I guess I will touch real quickly on one other one I got to watch earlier tonight. Australian horror film called Killing Ground. You've seen this type of horror movie a billion times. It's, you know, people in the middle of nowhere getting stalked by crazy hillbilly lunatics. And this is just the Australian outback variety of that, which, you know, you've also seen before in like Wolf Creek. So,
yes.
I do think that this movie was pretty damn well done, though. Pretty harrowing at moments, pretty intense. You know, somehow like shocking without being overly graphically violent. It's just the horrible kind of psychological torture that the people are put through before the violence, like the whole funny games aspect of it, where like you're tied up and these people know they're gonna die type shit. Yeah, and the story is a very simple. A couple goes camping. They pick the bad spot to go camping. I think the interesting twist that they do on it here is they show up, you know, it's called Killing Ground. They show up in the middle of a killing ground and they don't even know it. Like, so while they are like camping their first night, there's another couple like one tent away that are being fucking like brutally murdered, you know. They've been dragged away into the woods, you know, maybe a couple hundred feet, but they're being brutally murdered all night. So it's almost like there's like a first movie going on before this, and these people come in the middle of that, and they don't realize they're in the middle of a horror movie until like the next day, and they're like, how come we never see the people that are at the tent next door? And meanwhile, the movie's giving you flashbacks of what happened with the people in the tent next to them. You know, I'm giving it a simple explanation to be brief on this and, you know, give you an idea what it is. You know, it's outback Australian horror. Hillbillies are going to kill you.
So how does this play next to, like, Wolf Creek?
I'd honestly say it's as good, if not better. Like, I would say, like, the villain is not as like iconic and memorable, but they're also not cartoony like him either. Like,
right.
I'd say it's as good, if not better than it. Like, it's a wild ride from probably 20 minutes into the finish. It's about an hour and a half long. It's, you know, I think really good. It's just, again, it's such familiar ground, you know, such familiar territory that you feel like you've seen it a billion times, from Texas Chainsaw to Wolf Creek to, you know, what, Wrong Turn.
Right.
Over and over. I mean, it's just a super common horror story. But this one's, you know, like a lot of Australian films, pretty fucking intense. I'm going to give it a solid 4 and recommend, and it's on Netflix, so if you're into horror, look up Killing Ground. I think you'll like it. If you're into that, like, if you do not like Wolf Creek and shit like that, you're not going to like it. It's intense. It's fucking grim. So there you go.
I will, I'll be adding that to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I think you will dig it, Chris. You know, another film in this genre that we both really like is... The Hills Have Eyes.
Right.
It's not as good as that, but it's not bad either. Yeah, so enjoy it, Chris.
Cool.
For next week, I will have. Here's what I'll have for you. I'll have Battle of the Sexes. You know, the one with Steve Carell and Emma Watson.
Yeah, I might have that too.
I will have a horror film also on Netflix called A Dark Song, which I am actually watching. I was watching right before we recorded, so I'm not done with it. I'll just say I like it so far. Just leave it at that. And I'll have a film. At least I could, the ones I can guarantee. I'll have a film that I have never seen, and I don't know if you have, Chris, from 1980 called Used Cars.
It does not ring a bell.
It stars Kurt Russell, I think, in it might be his first role or one of, very early role for Kurt Russell. And it is, I want to say, Robert Zemeckis' first film. So before Back to the Future and all that.
Cool.
Supposedly a great comedy that I've never seen, but I will let you know.
All right. Lethal Weapon 2?
Oh, yeah. And Lethal Weapon. See, I keep forgetting. You might have to, like, just give me a little nudge / reminder at some point the next week in case I forget.
But, all right.
Yes, Lethal Weapon 2 as well.
Try to watch Lethal Weapon 2.
Continue our rewatch of the series. Come back for that.
Movie dudes.